You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. A couple of news updates here in the last hour from the Associated Press. All right, so you know this is like legit news. Talks are in the works for the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, to step aside at the end of the year. And he evidently is going to be replaced by the Director of the CIA, Mike Pompeo. So that news. And then this just a matter of a couple minutes ago. Top House Democrat Nancy Pelosi says Michigan Representative John Conyers, facing sexual misconduct allegations, should resign. What happened to due process? I get confused here. Some of this stuff moves too fast for me. Joining me is Chris Woodbridge, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired, editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette. Woody, interesting times we live in. Care to comment on breaking news? New Secretary of State, evidently, and Nancy Pelosi. Got any words of wisdom for us?
Well, I would say on Secretary Tillerson's side, that's very interesting news. You know, there have been obviously an awful lot of the rumors circulating around, and given some of his initiatives in reorganizing and in a lot of ways tightening the belt, tightening up the budget at the Department of State, interesting that that this would be announced now. You know, it's kind of one of those situations where you know, the outgoing guy with a month or so however to go makes a bunch of changes, and then the incoming guy has to then implement those and in some ways live with them, bearing in mind that all that needs to be confirmed by the Senate, which is a little busy with some other business right now. As far as members of Congress and sexual misconduct goes, on the one hand, I absolutely concur with your due process comment. It really doesn't matter who the citizen is. I kind of grew up thinking all laws bind equally and everyone is innocent until proven guilty. However, for even allegations like this for someone of that stature and that responsibility vested in them by their constituents, it's probably so distracting as to make it impossible for the person to do their job in the first place. So it may be the wisest thing practically to step aside so that work can get done while the legal wheels, then due process wheels, continue to turn. But it's still from the outside, it looks an awful lot like accusation equals guilt and punishment ensues. So, we don't tolerate that in the Marine Corps, and I don't know that we should tolerate it anywhere else.
Yet it goes on, and it is the work of powerful people in powerful places, and it's been that way for centuries. And I think organizations, institutions, do their best to not tolerate it. But, we see cases of it all the time in the military, not just in the Marine Corps, but DOD-wide. And so it's something that you have to be vigilant. To me, one of the interesting things is now it looks like accusers have confidence that they're going to be listened to, is as we look back on and I'll just use Matt Lauer. You know, there was a case, one of the accusations comes from a woman that says it happened to her in 2001. And she did tell people. And so to me, the other thing that you'll see here is that will be interesting as institutions look inward is who enabled this behavior. Because in a private organization, Matt Lauer is responsible for a lot of revenue at NBC. That Today Show is a huge, huge moneymaker for that corporation.
Absolutely.
And to show him the door and to show that revenue the door and not know what's going to happen is a risk that a lot of chief executives would not take. And the age-old play is this. It's your word against his. We will lawyer up. You can lawyer up. We will deny it. You will never work in this business again. And that's how that game gets played. So it's very interesting watching the power dynamics here now as the accuser is now giving, you know, equal footing and pretty sobering for, I'm sure, for a lot of people who've been predators in their life to say, oh, my God, you know.
So. No, you're spot on. And, you know, there's maybe overly idealistic or even naive in some ways, but I really do think that coming out the end of this, that the end product ultimately, I think, is going to be better for all of these organizations. We've certainly been through this, not just in the Marine Corps, but across DOD with reprisals against whistleblowers, with the way accusers are often treated and have been in the past, and it's not specific to sexual misconduct or sexual harassment. It certainly includes those, sexual assault, etc. But other cases where one person has the fortitude to do the right thing, to make the accusation, to make the information visible and available, to take the legal action, and then has suffered consequences for it, personally and professionally. If we can get to a more equitable place, a fairer place, where all laws do bind equally, I think we'll be better off.
You know what, and it's all that is a function of the people that you put in there. And it is a, you know, for instance, in the Marine Corps, these institutional changes that you make, you have to understand that the Marine Corps turns over 60% of the force every 3 years, and approximately 60% of the force is under the age of 26. So you can see how you have to skew to focus leadership on that 60% of the Marine Corps that you turn over and that is new. And it needs that structure. That needs that guidance.
Yeah, you're right on. And I think for those, for those of us who stuck around longer, particularly in leadership positions, you got to recognize that turnover number because that 60%, those thousands of Marines, will only ever have been in one Marine Corps. It was their Marine Corps. Their one enlistment, their one tour, and often it means one squadron, one battalion, one unit that they were part of, and for the rest of their lives, that's the Marine Corps to them. And so when we talk about our institutional culture and our institutional standards, that's how far-reaching that can be for that majority of the population. Well over half of the population only ever touches one Marine Corps. If you stick around a while, you see change over time. You're in multiple units, different jobs, different commands, different geographic areas. You see a lot of different Marine Corps that way. Right. But for the vast majority, it's one shot, and that is the definition of the institution, forevermore.
I want you to come back maybe next week. I'll give you a call, and I want to expand on some of these themes. And I also want to get your thoughts on the Navy, and maybe I'll get you and General Droughty on, and we can have a little bit of a roundtable about it. But to me, there's linkage in all of this, in a reluctance to institutionally adhere to the structure, fielding on Thursday night, somebody inspecting it, right? It's not your room. It's our room. And again, if you understand that they're going to be one and done, without that structure, given the world that they come from that has no structure, that won't hold them back when they fail, you are allowing them to backslide into being that. And I think some of the issues the Marine Corps has in terms of leadership, Marines United, is that backslide that, oh, really? This change really isn't forever. It was just kind of a boot camp thing. Now I can go back and be the scumbag that I am. And I mean, right? I mean, that's us and unplugged a little bit. But I think when you're reluctant, I kind of facetiously say, our parents were not afraid to be authority figures. I asked my dad why he never wanted, a lot of parents want to be their kids' friends, Dad. Why didn't you ever want to be my friend? well, you couldn't drive a car. You couldn't go drinking with me. Like, why did I need you as a friend? Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
That's it. You're a pretty crappy friend. I got to pay for all your meals. You can't drink and you can't drive me home.
Right. Right. That was the criteria.
That's not a very good friend.
Right. That's not a good friend. So, but he said, my job was to be your dad. Right?
Right.
And that's what I was. And so we seem to be not as easy in terms of sliding into that role, and we want to make it so they can understand it. We want to make them so, you know, they get it and it's easier and it's better. And I think ultimately we're making it worse and we're making it harder. And for us not to look at the Navy and say we don't have some of that those same themes creeping into the other services are crazy. And so I want to have you come back and talk about that. But before we get to the Gazette, which we may not get to today, that was a trick to get you to come on. You had the privilege of serving with Colonel Fox, who passed away last week. Tom Drowdy was just on talking about it. Tell us about serving with him. Where'd you serve with him? What rank were you? What rank was he? What was he doing? What were you doing? What was that like?
He was a colonel. He was the commanding officer of Officer Candidate School. And I apparently did so poorly there that they sent me back as a captain, and I served there from the end of 1991 until 1994 as an instructor, both down in the companies, platoon commander, company XO, training, screen, and evaluating officer candidates, and then also as the tactics officer, running the tactics department, and teaching fire team and squad level tactics to those officer candidates. It was intimidating. First coming on board, I was fresh back from Desert Storm. I was actually a captain selectee. I was still wearing first lieutenant, and I checked in, and there's Colonel Wesley Fox in his Charlies, and Korean War veteran. I mean, we're talking about a man who enlisted in the Marine Corps in 1950 to go fight in Korea, and came back from Korea a sergeant. Some of the other captains, we used to joke around that he wore ranks that are no longer in the Marine Corps, like technical sergeant, and carried weapons that you only see in a museum, like a BAR, Browning Automatic Rifle,
right.
in Korea. So almost a legendary character from history, let alone battlefield commission in Vietnam, Medal of Honor recipient for service in Vietnam as a company commander, and he's pretty remarkable to work for. Very intimidating, but what a trainer of candidates and a great man to have as the really the gatekeeper of commissioned service for that period of time. He took a lot of heat for it. We all knew that, even the captains on the staff, because the attrition rate was pretty high when he was there, but he felt a personal obligation to weed out those who didn't have the potential to serve as commissioned officers in the Marine Corps. And I think the one thing that he absolutely had a hard line on was about personal integrity. If there was even a remote question of a candidate's personal integrity, they were gone. He would disenroll them from the program and put his endorsement not recommended to reapply or return. And in his experience, you just didn't need someone who had questionable integrity serving as an officer of Marines, and I think that was directly shaped by his combat experience.
Talk to me about intimidating, because when you hear him interviewed, not yesterday I played a couple of hour-long interviews that he did. One, he wrote a book on leadership, so he was interviewed about that, and then the other one he did with the Veterans Historical project with the Library of Congress. And both are almost hour-long interviews. And very interesting. He seems, as Tom Droughty said, he was a Marine out of Central Casting. right? I mean, and I remember I was at the basic school from 89 to 91. And so our time in Quantico overlapped. And I remember Colonel Fox being at events that he would show up to. And, you know, he literally sucked the air out of the room in nothing but a way of reverence, right? Not, but he looked the part. But what comes through in his interviews is he is a very congenial man. It seems like a very even-keeled man. So explain the intimidation part.
You're spot on. I mean, a consummate, gentleman, a Southern gentleman of the old school. And yes, definitely from Central Casting, from the way he looked, piercing blue eyes, sharp jaw, but he would look you dead in the eyes. And if you even had the slightest knowledge of the places that he had fought, the things he'd done, when he started asking a leading question or wanted your opinion on something, it wasn't a gotcha moment. You're not walking into an L-shaped ambush, but you don't want to let somebody like that down. Yeah. And you want to, perform up to his standard. And it's a very high standard. A man that epitomizes a Marine combat leader, and particularly for those of us who are, young infantry officers, that's in a lot of ways, the role model of that sort of combat experience that you wanted to emulate, and that's what I mean by intimidation. I mean, it's really, it's a pucker factor within yourself of having a boss like that. And I'll tell you also, I mean, he was not a physically intimidating man, not a great big, but he was fit as hell at that time. And, he could get out there and mix it up with candidates and Marines that were young enough to be his grandchildren.
You know, one of my lieutenants, when I was a company commander, I saw a post something on Facebook, and he said, when I went through OCS, he said Colonel Fox would get out there and run the PFT with us. And he could run. He could outrun just about anybody in the company except guys who ran track in either high school or college, who were great runners. But he said he could run.
Pretty impressive. He could get over that obstacle course like people less than half his age, and it didn't stop when the candidates weren't on board. As some folks know, you run candidate companies throughout the year, and in between those companies, you have some downtime, bringing new staff on board, training the staff, doing what Marines do, going to rifle range, doing all your annual training, etc. In between candidate companies, the PT program for the OCS staff. I mean, he'd personally lead this at times, and we'd go out on his conditioning hikes. And, again, he walked the legs off, Marines well under half his age, young enough to be his kids. And he used to joke about, younger generation must be, tennis shoe people, cause they have trouble hiking the hills in boots.
Well, I was telling Tom Droughty in one of the interviews, he talks about, his first 4 years in the Marine Corps, he didn't wear civilian clothes. He liked being a Marine so much, when he went home to work on the farm during leave, when he was on leave, he wore his utilities and his boots. And then when he went out on liberty, whether he was home or at work, he wore one of his service uniforms. And, so I imagine his body got used to boots pretty quick. One other question for you. In terms of being kind of leader, when people would hit those when you, sorry, there's just another report. Al Franken supposedly groped an Army veteran during that same USO tour. So cue the music. You know what's amazing to me about this stuff is, you know, to do it, to go up in front of God and everybody, you know, like Matt Lauer trots his apology out today like that's going to be the end of it. There's a chance Matt Lauer is going to jail. Harvey Weinstein, he's going to jail. Kevin Spacey, there's a chance he's going to jail for rape of a minor. And so I find this, they think it's just theater, one other thing that they'll walk away from. I hope they paid to the full extent of the law. So anyway.
But, you know, it's interesting, the fancy word juxtaposition, but that sort of behavior is exactly the sort of thing when, you know, somebody like Colonel Fox in particular was talking about personal integrity. Those are the sorts of behaviors, and what the organization does about them is exactly what he was talking about. And that was why he was so hard over on not having people with subjective ethics, relativistic morals and questionable integrity serving as leaders in the Marine Corps, because too much is on the line. We can laugh about it, but you're right. There are some significant consequences well beyond just losing your $25 million a year job.
And you can't engineer around that, right? You cannot, against those kind of flaws, you can't engineer around that. And it would have been interesting to sit in meetings with Colonel Fox and the recruiting command when they were bitching at him. If anybody did, I'd like to be in that meeting. If anybody wanted to take Colonel Fox to task for his high attrition rate. I wonder who was the head of MCRIC at the time and what they had to say about it. It'd be kind of interesting to hear that when you raise a point and you're waiting for him to rebut it. Well, General, let me tell you what I think. I'd pay money to have audio. I want to ask you what was he like when a crisis happened? I would imagine he was a fairly cool customer.
Very, very cool. Very cool. I'll be honest. I don't think I ever saw him, raise his voice or anything like that. And there were, there were crises every year from kind of standard, the standard crises of pushing a couple hundred, high performing officer candidates around in the summertime. You get, multiple heat injuries and, can tend to overwhelm the medical system, at times. Cool customer, let people do their jobs, let the system work. And there were, there were other, problems as you'd see in any Marine unit. You'd have discipline problems, with Marines at times and, if it was an honest mistake, he was very fair. If it was a question of, lying, cheating, stealing, an integrity issue, he had no patience for that. And Marines knew it, and they behaved accordingly.
My guest, Chris Woodbridge, we're talking about Colonel Wesley Fox, who passed away last week. His service, I just got an email from Barney Barnum, who supported Colonel Fox in Operation Dewey Canyon. And so I asked him, I said, hey, I hate to impose on you, but would you mind coming on talking about him? He said, I'd love to. I'll be at the service tomorrow and tomorrow afternoon, so we'll hopefully have that audio on Monday. Let's talk about the Gazette. I missed you last month, so give us a rundown of November, and then we'll get to December.
Okay,
before I end, any final thoughts on the passing of Colonel Fox?
He was a legendary Marine. His example still stands, for those of us who knew him, but there are some good books that he has co-authored and written on leadership and about his time in the Corps. So that stands as part of our intellectual record. And there's an old saying that when someone like him passes, that now he's for the ages, and I think that's true.
All right, let's talk about the November issue of the Marine Corps Gazette. And you'll run something about Colonel Fox in the December edition of Leatherneck.
Actually, the January issue of Leatherneck will have an obituary in it, and we'll also have an announcement in the Gazette as well.
Got it. All right. On to the November issue of the Gazette.
Which is our birthday issue, and I think one of the with some limited time, one of the highlights is I had the opportunity to interview General Miller, and published that interview in the November issue. Had a good sit down up in the Commandant's office for well over an hour, and really talked about a wide range of subjects, but the interview, I think, really hits on his vision, his guidance for the future of the force. And even though I wrote it myself, it's a fairly good interview. And you've got really the word and the priorities from the horse's mouth there. So I'd encourage certainly every serving Marine to read that, and all veterans, friends of the Corps. It's a good insight into how our current commandant thinks and what's on his mind.
Did you ask him if it was in fact true that I was his favorite company commander?
That didn't come up.
Hey, before we start, there's one thing I want to tell you. He didn't go there?
No.
Unbelievable.
No, not at all.
Unbelievable. Give us one thing out of that interview that either surprised you or in some way made a dent in that thick skull of yours.
The three big headlines he wants, and he's taken a line out of the book Legacy that he has put on the reading list after hosting the coaches of the New Zealand national rugby team, the All Blacks. Mm-hmm. They have a saying that they need to be able to learn without losing. In coaching in a lot of sports, we always say, yeah, you learn more from a loss than from a win.
Right.
And there's a lot of truth in that, but for really high performing organizations, you can't afford the loss. Certainly not in the armed forces and in the Marine Corps in particular. We can't afford to lose, in order to learn. So he's really looking at, developing a learning culture, in a regime of learning in the organization that will allow us not to have to go through a defeat or a loss in order to learn important lessons about innovation and modernization for the future. And he really had a kind of three headlines for the force as a whole, and read more, drink less, and PT smarter. And,
he's been making that point. He sent me a note, I don't know, a week or so ago. He said, if I could give Marines one piece of advice, it would be this. Be very careful with alcohol. If you want a life-changing piece of advice, be very careful with alcohol.
And absolutely. That's almost verbatim comments when we were talking. Yeah.
The other thing that he put in his birthday message is, and I thought Combat Camera did great with the audio effects right at the end, is that whole thing, we gotta win. And then you hear this, we gotta win. And I love that because most of us are team sports guys. And, mm-hmm. and I like that we gotta win. There's no question about that. We gotta win, and we gotta practice like we're going to win. Not like we're gonna go out there and throw it out there on the field. We gotta practice like we need to win. I like that. I like those, the Secretary of Defense has all those little, sayings that he loved because they chunked information, a lot of information. Guardian angels, you know, had is pregnant with this concept and that is incumbent upon you. And I love those little things. We Got to Win, I think, is a huge one. And so it's interesting. Neller, very much a team sports guy and a sports guy.
Very much so.
So interesting. Okay, so he's in there. What else is in there?
Well, you've got a couple of interesting things. You've got something not necessarily common in the Gazette, but an article about a collection of Marine Corps artwork. These were Marines, actually in many cases World War II Marines who really translated their experiences into artwork, into oil paintings, watercolors, those sorts of things. And there's a pretty extensive collection of that art in a place you wouldn't necessarily expect to find it, which is Ivy League Brown University. And so I've been contacted by a trustee of that collection, and he provided us some images of this artwork and a write up on it. And again, not exactly a stock in trade for Marine Corps issues and that sort of thing. But in November, it's always good to focus a little bit on our history, our esprit, and our culture. So a little bit of culture there.
You know, it's interesting, Woody. I want to say when I was talking to General Christmas once, he told me. He goes, you know, Mac, one of the things that not a lot of people know is the Marine Corps owns a lot of art. And he was talking about, the museum, the cathedral. And he said, you know, when we looked at this, we started like assessing, like, well, how much space do we need and what do we have? And, you know, he said, we looked at the amount of art we have and we were all stunned. What? You know, we knew that we have art, you know, it's you know, headquarters and what. He said, we have a ton of it. Do you think it would surprise most people at the amount of art?
Oh no, there's no question. And not just, what's on the walls of the National Museum of the Marine Corps is very literally the tip of the iceberg.
That's right.
There's far more artwork than can be shown at any given time. And the conservation effort that goes on behind the scenes to preserve and keep that stuff from deteriorating is really pretty amazing. But you would truly be surprised. It's probably bigger than the collection of many art museums in the world.
Wow! All right. What else? Give us one more thing in the November edition.
I would also we've got actually a series of articles, couples of articles. Again, looking at the Commandant's push on force fitness and holistic fitness. We've got three different articles about spiritual fitness.
That's not without its controversy too. You guys are trying to make everybody Catholics, which I applaud, but not everybody's going for it.
It's a very balanced look. You've got one article in particular, just as an example, by one of our Navy chaplains, Lieutenant Mark Wan, and the title of the article is "Are Combat Sports Spiritual?" And he really looks at the linkages, not strictly just focusing on the Marine Corps martial arts program, but on combat sports as a broad category, and the spiritual aspects of them. I think that's worth reading, because it's, all joking aside, it's not about making everybody into one faith group or another. In fact, it's not necessarily spirituality is in this context, as in terms of spiritual fitness, is not necessarily linked to a given religion or faith group. Spirituality and spiritual behavior is a little bit different from that. It can be a little bit sensitive, but we still practice freedom of religion and separation of church and state.
Are you surprised that he's gone there? Because you know you can imagine, right, us kicking it around in the OPT. Now it goes to smaller group. Like, oh my God, when we roll this one out, you know, we're going to get some serious blowback. But I mean, I would tell you that the guy, like Jack, do you know Jack Hoban?
Absolutely, yep, know him well.
Guys like that would tell you there's an absolute spirituality that's not linked to religion that fortifies human beings in conflict.
Yes.
And it's that spirituality that the Commandant is talking about. But to get to that discussion, you got to go through some work. So it's interesting.
That's right. That's exactly
interesting,
right.
Interesting stuff.
And the important part is, you know, having that discussion in the right way, in order to make the positive impact on Marines and on their lives, not let the other pieces of it become a distraction.
Well, and again, I don't know that you can look at issues like Marines United and some of the other things that he's had to confront without examining these parts of your life. Look, it's not a one-pronged solution. It's multi-pronged, and it involves these things and consistently fortifying these horizontal themes in Marines. And if you do that, you got a chance. But you know, but it's not a one solution, you know, it's not a one-item solution. It's multiple. And to me, I love the moral courage that the Commandant has.
Mm-hmm.
He's a normal guy, and he sees problems, and he wants to fix them. And if you say, yeah, well, this should be part of the solution, but it might be a little bit too – it might be a bridge too far. I can hear his response.
We all hear it. It might be too sensitive to go – it's like, no, not necessarily. It doesn't have to be.
Why? I could hear him saying, why are you saying that? Why are you saying that? Why are you saying that, Mac? Well, sir, I don't know that institutionally that we want to go. You let me worry about the institution. Is it where we need to go? What does everybody think? And you know, if it made sense to him and the heads nodded, you know, he's not afraid to go there, which is refreshing, which is nice as a Commandant. So interesting. All right, let's switch months. December.
Okay, December actually just hitting the street, probably in people's mailboxes, you know, within the last few days. Obviously a holiday issue, and you know, various folks might be wondering what to get for their Marines. So tried to help them out a little bit in this issue, and the overarching answer is help Marines build their professional libraries. So you've got a section in the magazine really dedicated to professional reading, and then we've doubled up on our book reviews this month with some you know, some ideas. Honestly, we're not you know, we're not limiting ourselves to the Commandant's professional reading list. So you've got I actually republished an article that General Mattis wrote back when he was a major general about professional reading and the value of reading to a, you know, to a modern warrior. I provide a list. It's a part of a list that was developed by Dr. Williamson Murray at Ohio State. And this is a piece of his recommended reading list on military history. So it's what you call a curated reading list, meaning that it's been evaluated for the, you know, kind of the top 3 to 5 books in specific subject areas. So if you're going to read, you know, one book on World War II in the Pacific, read this one. If you're going to read three, read these three. That sort of advice. And that's a great overview of a military history library. And then I actually did a review of Admiral Stavridis' book, which is called the Leader's Bookshelf. And that also, that whole book is essentially a curated handbook or a list of recommended reading for leaders, and it's very it's applicable to leaders in any walk of life, but it's taken from book recommendations from about 50 of the top military leaders from the last, you know, three decades, admirals, generals, all services, making their recommendations on leadership books to read. So, you know, in the midst of all that, there's ample suggestions for the Marine who has everything. Obviously our book reviews as well provide some other possibilities there.
All right, so it's Christmas focused on things that you could get specifically oriented on the reading list. What's the picture on the cover? Is it you? Is it you in a Santa outfit? What is what did you do on the cover?
No, I got it. That's the Combat Charlie Brown Christmas on the cover. It's the inside of a tent at probably a draft shelter, and you know, tiny little Charlie Brown Christmas tree, and some Marines in the rack on either side. Not a creature is stirring, except maybe a I don't know, camel spider. So
the here's a question for you, Woody. Mac, interesting. I'm looking at getting my daughter, who's a Lieutenant JG in the Navy, a book on leadership. I'd be curious to know from both of you what you'd recommend. Book on leadership, Woody.
Yeah, I would. So for a Navy JG, I would make two recommendations. First, I would recommend Admiral Stavridis' book for no other reason than it will allow that young officer to, you know, give her some additional information, and then she can start developing her own wish list of which books to read on leadership. So there's a it's kind of a cover the waterfront there. And then if you're a Navy officer and you're going to read one title, and I actually there'll be a review of this coming out in the January edition. But the U.S. Naval Institute recently published a book on mentorship, and it's a collection of prior published articles, essays, and interviews. Primarily from the Navy, but also Marine Corps and Coast Guard, on the subject of mentoring and mentorship as a tool in leadership.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't a book on leadership. I haven't read it yet, but I would. Colonel Fox wrote a book. That I think is entitled "The Six Essential Elements of Leadership."
He's written a couple of books about Marine leadership, right. And co-authored a couple as well.
One's called Marine Rifleman. And the other one's called Six Essential Elements of Leadership, Marine Corps Wisdom from a Medal of Honor Recipient. I would recommend, I haven't read it, but I intend to, and I would recommend that, and just so you get a contrast between you're growing up in the United States Navy in its leadership pipeline, and I would say that there's nobody I've spoken to who hasn't said that this guy is one of the greatest leaders they've ever been around. And when you hear him speak of the actions that led to him being the recipient of the Medal of Honor, what you hear is, all I was doing was doing my job. And I wear this for my company because I didn't do what Audie Murphy did, jumping up on a tank and holding off, you know, a battalion of tanks or whatever the hell Audie Murphy did that day. And I mean no disrespect to Audie Murphy. I just don't know the size of the element, whether it was, Woody, do you know? Was it a tank company? Was it a tank battalion? I don't know. But he mowed a bunch of people down with that 50 cal on top of that tank that was on fire. Or at least that's what I saw in the movie. I don't know anybody who, when they talk about Wesley Fox, a man with an eighth grade education who rose to the rank of gunnery sergeant, selected for first sergeant, right? Then he is commissioned when the Marine Corps commissions about 5,000 to 10,000 staff NCOs, and he's sent to Vietnam. No OCS, no basic school. You're now, he says, one day I was a gunny, the same day I was a second lieutenant, and I was headed for Vietnam to be an advisor. He extends in Vietnam his advisor tour because he wants to fight with Marines because he didn't think the South Vietnamese Marines got after it hard enough. And then he becomes the commanding officer of Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines. But it's lifelong leadership lessons that he learned from a guy who loved being a Marine and knew what leadership was, because I believe that the roots of what he saw in leadership came from his dad, came from growing up on a farm, and came from growing up in a rural community. And so I would say that I would recommend that, even though I've never read it, simply because of his reputation, and that you will take good things away from that. And then it provides a good contrast for that.
Yeah.
So
I'd agree.
How do you disagree with reading a book written by Wesley Fox,
right,
man?
Right.
Yeah, something would fall on you very quickly, Woody, if you did. Here's another email. I've got a sergeant recommend a book about combat for him. Woody? Combat book for a sergeant.
Oh gosh, for a sergeant. I would go with what is the title? I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. I'm trying to find the precise title. I think the title is Going to War. It's personal accounts of direct combat and the preparation for it. Hang on a second. I'm gonna see if I can find the exact
title.
Hey,
Woody, can you help me get a book published?
Can I help you get a book published?
Yeah.
Not really, no.
Why not? Come on. Here's the title of the book, Things I'd Like My Sons to Know Before They Went to War. And I have sons because I don't have daughters in the Marine Corps. And what it is, it's a chapter, one by Dave Furness, one by Paul Kennedy, one by Will Cosentini, one by Mike Musselman, one by Chris Bronzi, one by Joe Gros, all these different guys, one chapter, one lesson. These are the things I wish I knew before I went to war. Can you help me get it published?
That's a great idea.
And we can and see the greatness of it is I can publish 100 volumes of it. All I have to do is turn the lens a little bit and change who it is. It'll be it's a straightforward format for the writer. You know, bottom line up front, here it is. Give me 6 pages on it, and then and that's it, and your conclusion. And it's really Cosentini. You better understand the process of when your Marines are killed, what happens, and you better be there steadfast like a rock when it's happening. And you need to be discriminate about it, and you need to make sure that grief is managed so that you can things that you could never learn. In peacetime. And so,
the book I was referring to is Carl Marlantis's book, What It's Like to Go to War.
Yeah.
Largely focused on a small unit level, individual Marine or soldier level, infantry combat, Vietnam experience as well. So I'd recommend that for a sergeant to read. But what you were talking about
my book. Let's talk about me.
Your book. It's actually your collection.
Whoa! Don't throw water on me already. It's an ensemble event. Because there's so many good guys who have great experience. And what do we do with those lessons? Unless they write for the Gazette. And like a lot of guys, have this stuff in their head and so.
Well, in real practical terms, and I know, a fair number of your listeners who have thought about writing about their experiences in the Marine Corps in combat or elsewhere, you know, there's really kind of two worlds in book publishing. One world is a publishing house basically likes your idea and buys it from you, pays you to write a book, and then that publishing house prints it, distributes it, markets it, and they make a bunch of money, and you make some money off of it as well. What's far more common with our subject matter, even such as you were just describing, a collection like that, are what are called self-published or print-on-demand books, which means you, as the editor or author, bear all the costs of actually printing, binding, producing, shipping, marketing that book. And if it sells, if bookstores or other dealers pick it up, then you start to recoup some of the money you invested in creating this work. Otherwise, you wind up with a garage full of boxes of books, which unfortunately happens sometimes.
Do you think people would buy, for instance,
the book you're describing? Oh, I think you'd.
I'd sell the hell out of
it. Market for that. Yeah,
so do I. Well, and again, the reason I think so is because I know these guys, right? These are no shit Marines, you know. And again, the beauty of it is you can expand it. You know, it's not rank specific, and it's all written, you know, matter of fact Marine style, and it's just things. I mean, literally, I thought about this when my oldest was getting ready to go to Afghanistan. With 1/7, he ultimately, his company got off-ramp. They had off-ramp one company, and he went to Jordan. Then he went back to Iraq when we started the build-up. He was at the Qatim for 7 months, doing, security and whatnot. But, it's like, okay, well, my son's going to go to war. Like, what would I tell him? And then I thought, but I want you to talk to Dave Furness. I want you to talk to Chris Bronze. I want you to talk to Brian Zickafu, Sergeant Major type. You know, these guys I've served with, they're just awesome, awesome guys. And just and ask them, hey, what's one thing you tell me that I need to do here? And they wince about it, right? One thing?
Yeah, one thing.
One thing. And then but what you get is this heartfelt lesson that they learned in combat that they had no idea before they went. And so I thought that'd be an interesting book. So, all right. You're now my agent. I'll call you. But I do want you to come back next week and talk about, if you don't mind, and roundtable with.
You want my lesson?
Yeah. What would it be?
I would tell you, and it might seem, trivial and, banal, admin stuff. No late fitness reports. No late fitness reports, or you will have, for example, what happens when you have a late or missing fitness report for a staff sergeant going up for gunny and both the reporting senior and the reviewing officer killed in action? You've got to now generate you have to generate a report for the Marine. Very much outside the bounds of the PES manual, if you expect that Marine to even be competitive for promotion. But it's not like you can go back and lean on the RS and RO to get that work done.
Well, let me tell you, I was as a former staff sec for the division commander, I can tell you firsthand, people who left that so he would be the reviewing officer on reports that they wrote. That they didn't get it done, and then all of a sudden somebody's calling from CONUS, got a promotion board shortly, and they've got a gap in a combat fitness report. Hello, right? It's a big deal with the division commander as a reviewing officer, or the assistant division commander as a reviewing officer. Either way, and you're trying to scramble and thinking, it's part of taking care of your Marines. It's a big part of it. Interesting. Here, what do you hear? A grunt comes up with an admin. See, that's the beauty of the book. Like, what? Who is? Then they would go. They'd go, and so at the end of the lesson, they would, or probably right under the number of the chapter. So it's chapter 2, picture of Chris Woodbridge, and then a little bit of who you are. And then they read, like, so you're, is this guy an admin guy? Let me go back to that little bio that I didn't read. He's a grunt? What is this? What kind of lesson is this? But that's the beauty of the book.
Yep.
That's the beauty of the book. My lesson is keep your head in the game at all times. One of the greatest things that served me in great stead was lessons I learned playing baseball and team sports. To watch little things and to always have your head in the game and anticipate. I'm seeing that. What does it mean? What does it mean to my 360-degree security? Because the way people get really jacked up in combat is somebody distracts you and everybody gets caught looking in one direction. And then, especially in Iraq, because they never ran the suicide BBID at you without a distraction. So I learned that in baseball. You know, what are you going to do if they hit the ball to your left? What are you going to do if they hit the ball to your right? If it's slow in front of you, if it's over your head, how does that change with the runner at first? How does it change when there's runners at second, third, and one out? How does it change? That constant permutation in your head of what you're going to do next and how you're going to respond. I call it head in the game, head in the game, head in the game, head in the game.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, sir. I will give you a call. Hopefully next Thursday you can make yourself available and join Tom Drowdy.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, bud. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
The one and only Chris Woodbridge here. Michael Musselman standing by. He will join us next on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. Somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff, I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.